This episode is entitled Coffee with a Bigot. Today, I broke bread with a person I'd believed was a fool, a bigot, and a zealot. And I came away knowing more about a thoughtful, kind, and generous young man, driven by a love of his family and a need to fit in. He was a man that reminded me too much of my younger self, an extremist proud to be a moderate. A ghost of Christmas past. I fucking hate that I bring out the best in people, I told a friend by message on my way home. We have so much in common it hurts, I said of my new friend, the bigot. We both grew up in Port Adelaide, catching the outer harbour train, in a house paid for by our hard-working parents who taught us about community and kindness and sacrifice and self-determination. We experimented with religion at its extremes, himself with exclusionary Zionism, myself with the militant atheism of Dawkins, of Harris, of Hitchens. Both of them were rooted in an Islamophobia that we never cared for, that we didn't even recognize initially, and that ultimately drove us back towards a middle ground. In his case, a belief in a two-state solution. In mine, a discovery of the playful, fence-sitting joy of Tim Minchin, and later of the cheerful secular reverie of Daniel Dennett. And so my messages to my friend continued. It hurts that he believes in the Liberal Party and has a libertarian streak, that he prefers Donald to Hillary because Donald's not a part of the political establishment, because he also seems to be a kind and generous and thoughtful young man whose development has been shaped by a love of his family and a need to fit in. I felt betrayed by my empathy as I sat across from a man that told me that while he wants to see the law changed to reflect our secular society, he personally opposes gay marriage because he believes it's sinful. I didn't even object because I wanted to hear more of his story. I was late to the cafe to meet him, overhearing the tail end of a phone conversation. Yeah, I might support you, but I'll have to hear what the other candidates' proposals are. Anyway, I've got to go. A mate's here. Mate, I thought. Am I his mate? In election week, I wrote an article about the bigot. His political ticket was disendorsed by the Islamic Student Society after, though not necessarily because, they found out he'd attended a racist rally. I was generous to him, as I tend to be generous to people, because I didn't know him, and I'd heard he'd already had a rough week. But I hardly thought this warranted a friendship. Was I his friend? He certainly seemed to think so. He complimented my work, lamenting that other journalists are confrontational and uninterested in a complete portrait of their subjects. On this, we agreed. The start of a worrying trend. At this point, I feel the need to clarify that I'm no apologist for bigotry, and that I'm no fan of the hate espoused by the group he'd previously associated with, Reclaim Australia. Part of the reason we were able to get along was that, in no uncertain terms, he denounced the Reclaim movement. He'd attended the rally specifically because he's opposed to radical Islam, he said. He even invited Muslim friends to attend with him, arm in arm. His face paled as he told me this, and I felt that I could trust him. Elsewhere in our conversation, he felt the need to clarify his Zionist positions, that he believes in a two-state solution, that Israel should be culturally Jewish, not a theocracy, that a Jewish state ought to incorporate Jerusalem, but Palestinians also have a strong claim to those lands. All in all, he was a far cry from the teenager a year ago, who claimed a solution to the Middle East situation would be easy. Those who know me are aware that I have many reasons, some of them very personal, to disagree with the Liberal Party and its supporters. I mean, I'm a conscientious, young, bisexual, atheist, writer, slash student on welfare. The Liberal Party have no place for me. And in turn, there's no place in my heart for isolationists, or for those that want to tear down our institutions, those that want to remove welfare because they think their neighbours are bludgers, cheats and con men, those that think everyone can pay their way, and if by chance you can't, you should be grateful for the rare philanthropic kindness of strangers that throw a buck your way. By design, they live a lonely life, those isolationists. Surely, my disdain actually suits them rather well. They ought to crave it, to wear it proudly. But I also think I need to rethink my prejudices about the prejudiced, having now met such a conscious young bigot. No, governments aren't always as corruptible as individuals, though it's easier to eschew personal responsibility within their ranks. No, the generosity of charitable individuals isn't able to meet the welfare needs of our entire population, but being raised in a loving community can make it hard to understand why welfare is necessary. No, not everyone can pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But if my father had somehow built two companies out of dirt and gritted teeth, I'd be a young lib too. There's far too much celebrity in politics and far too little compassion. For all the inclusiveness of the left's policies, there's too much division, too much gossip, and too much warring factionalism. And for all the untempered, draconian horror of the right's general intellectual minimalism, the religious right remain a tempting bunch because they wrap it all up in the most beautiful of velvet bows, good intentions. Inasmuch as anarchy is a useful word these days, and given the rather liberal modern use of the term, there's a good case to be made that any argument involving some nebulous sense of anarchy is likely utter bullshit, but the religious right represent a different kind of anarchy. A separate social structure that will overcome our institutions through a kind of capitalist kindness. The good church will come quietly, letting the government tick on, but diminishing government services, instead providing charity within church walls to all that come and listen. And the revolution will come around on the collection plate. There's no need for government when we can love and cherish our neighbours, they'll say. And it will be hard to argue that they're wrong, because they're not. Not entirely. Given our uncharitable, discompassionate, godless wasteland, albeit a wasteland littered with the ruins of a semi-working system their liberal chums dismantled and continue to tear apart, it's hard not to want to damn it all and live within those goodly church walls where charity and compassion reigns among those folk that know the good word. A shame, then, that crumbs spared from the lips of the rich won't feed those whose hunger is more systemic than your good intentions, that the church's walls are a shelter to those within, but a barrier to those without, that we do indeed live in a secular society. But much of this is projection. Our friendly neighbourhood so-called bigot didn't talk about the church for long. He didn't talk much about ideology at all. What he did talk about was his deep love for his father, who was incredibly sick during that same election week, and is now in a worse state, thanking me in the same breath for going easier on him than was my right as a political writer. He talked about his childhood, about his teenage relationships, and he passionately held court on the US politics of Clinton and Trump, more widely read on their politics than on ours, a mark, I've come to believe, of many strong Australian political students in their larval stages. I believe it was in an interview with Jon Stewart that George Carlin said, "I hate groups of people, but I love individuals. Every person you look at, you can see the universe in their eyes if you're really looking." I hate to be the kind of asshole that quotes George Carlin as though he was a prophet. But today I had a coffee with a man I believed was a bigot, and in a way, he was confrontingly like me. I don't know what could be more profound than that.
And people are wonderful. People, I love individuals. I hate groups of people. I hate people who have a group of people with a common purpose. Because pretty soon they have little hats, you know, and armbands, and fight songs, and a list of people they're going to visit at 3 a.m. So I dislike and despise groups of people, but I love individuals. Every person you look at, you can see the universe in their eyes if you're really looking. And they're great.